Basis, news, radio, and much more. The website is redeyescreations.com. Today we have Kurt Lindahl back on the program to discuss geomancy, ley lines, spatial relationships of ancient and modern monuments, and new areas and research that is discussed in his new book titled Axis Mundi. Also coming up, more on the Thomas Jefferson ley line, the octagonal Dome of the Rock in Jerusalem and its axis from which ley lines are generated. Also, we discussed the Georgia Guidestones, and Kurt shares an interesting perspective about the new Freedom Tower, the World Trade Center 1, and the building as a talisman. Stay with us. Welcome back to Red Eyes Radio. Kurt Lindahl, it's great talking with you again. You've done a lot of work since we last talked back in 2009. You have new videos, you have a new book out, and much more. Looking forward to talking about some of it here today. Thank you for coming on the program, first of all, Kurt.
Well, thanks for having me, Henrik. I appreciate it. It's great to be back again and to be here to tell everybody about the new things I found.
That's right. New updates, new work that you've been posting and doing and uploading and so forth on survivalcell.blogspot.com, your website, going into the ideas of geomantic information systems. It was back in 2009, as I mentioned, we did the first show, but why don't we discuss a little bit of overarching ideas about your work? I guess I would like to ask you how you would define it for a potential newcomer, Kurt.
Okay, well, what I found basically revolves around the concept of what the axis mundi is, and or the rotational axis of the world, or culturally what would be called the center of the world for each culture or town. And when you look at this, part of the tradition of the Axis Mundi is to have had a temple built at the center of each axis that would define the templum or the seen world from that point. And really what we're looking at is, on a very practical level, is a way to legally describe property for the rulers of that society. Like, the best example is the way the Romans used it. And they would have an augur or a priest assist the leader or the ruler in establishing the axis. And many times the building would have a geometrical shape, such as an octagon is the most obvious one that we'll be looking at, where the actual facets of the building define the templum. They actually point in directions that are valued by that culture. Now, this is my theory. No one is telling you this or anything. This has come from me surveying on Google Earth.
This is not something you've found in the literature of the particular culture you were investigating. That's what you're saying.
No, exactly. They speak about it and say that an axis is defined and it's used to establish the street plan and things like that. But from my research, I found that it's valued even more than that. And it defines kind of their whole empire. And it can extend over, large spaces sometimes, large distances. As the world progressed, at first it just defined, like in Rome, the Egyptian obelisk and the Windrose markers at St. Peter's Square define directions that are valued by the Catholic faith. It defines the geomancy of the Holy Roman Empire. It points to Aachen, Germany, where the Charlemagne seat of power was and the Aachen Cathedral was. And it points to Regensburg, where the Ottonian dynasty made their base. And finally, to the Schloss Schönbrunn in Vienna, Austria, where the Habsburg dynasty had their power base. So that's just an example. And all of the other directions indicated by the Windrose marker seem to point to places that are significant philosophically or religiously to the Catholic faith. So that's a good example there. So the Great Pyramid could be considered an axis. The hexagonal feature in the ruins of Baalbek, the Hagia Sophia in Istanbul, and when you get over to the United States here, of course, later, I found out the International Peace Garden and Thomas Jefferson's home, Poplar Forest, also may have been meant to represent an axis mundi.
Now, Thomas Jefferson has been one of the node points, I guess, in your work and your research, and this is something that you began fairly early on. Thomas Jefferson, his ley line, his axis mundi, how has that work progressed? Have you found out new things since then and how it ties in with some of the other new findings, or how would you...
Yes. Actually, it's interesting. Jefferson's value of the octagon or the octagonal structure, I feel, goes back to the Byzantine Empire, and this kind of reveals maybe some of the history of masonry or occult groups that is overlooked somewhat, because most people don't think of the Byzantines having a big influence in what later became masonry and other occult groups like that. And when I say occult, I just mean secret societies, not anything necessarily bad or evil.
Right.
But Justinian I, the Byzantine emperor, kind of clandestinely had this octagonal structure built in Ravenna, Italy, when it was being ruled by the Ostrogoths. And it's, if you look into the details of it, the Theodoric, the Ostrogothic ruler of Ravenna at the time, agreed to start constructing this building using Byzantine engineers and artisans. And in Ravenna at this time, it was an interesting arrangement between the Ostrogoths, they were of the Arian faith, which is not like the Arian Nazi faith, but it's spelled A-R-I-A-N, and they had kind of a Gnostic view of Christ as a man. So this is an interesting early kind of reference to that view of Christ that later was valued at Rennes-le-Château and the Languedoc region of France that's so famous for the Da Vinci Code and the work that Henry Lincoln's done and everything. So I believe Justinian wanted to create his own axis that he created himself, because Hagia Sophia already existed, though he rebuilt the Hagia Sophia after the Nika riots and included pillars from Baalbek and some other ancient sites in that construction. I think he felt it pertinent to create his own axis. So by subterfuge and manipulation, he was able to get San Vitale built, and then by the time the Byzantines actually took over Ravenna, the building was just being finished. And it's an interesting octagonal structure that does seem to function as an axis. It points right to Axum, Ethiopia, where the Ark of the Covenant is supposed to be. One of the facets creates an azimuth on the globe. And what is fascinating about that is also the Dome of the Rock, which is an octagon, creates an azimuth that points to Axum also. So, yeah, and when you examine the story of how the Dome of the Rock was created, it's frighteningly similar to the story of how San Vitale was created in Ravenna. Although the Muslims at the time controlled Jerusalem, there was an arrangement. The story is almost identical with, by this time, it was Emperor Justinian II. And the caliph who ruled Jerusalem at the time requested Byzantine engineers and artists to come help build the Dome of the Rock. And I feel at this time is when they may have arranged to have that octagon oriented. If you look at it, none of the facets are oriented perfectly north to south. It was intentionally tilted a little bit to the west, I think, to attain this alignment with Axum, Ethiopia. And what is also terribly interesting about the Temple Mount is that the building today that's known as the Al-Aqsa Mosque was built by Justinian I as the Church of St. Mary Justinian. And there's conflicting reports about that. Many of the accounts say that the building was razed or destroyed and then rebuilt by the Muslims, and other ones just say that they added a dome to it, and that was the only modification they made. But if you look at the interior of the Al-Aqsa Mosque, it resembles a Byzantine basilica with the way it's laid out and the columns and the linear aspect of it. So the spatial relationship of the Al-Aqsa Mosque and the Dome of the Rock is very, very similar to the layout of the Temple of Jupiter and the hexagonal feature in the ruins of Baalbek.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. See, this is an interesting aspect. I want to try to get a little closer to the octagon, the importance of this, and also the relationship, what happens basically when you have an octagon on the earth, and then the way you lay the lines accordingly to be able to see what they kind of touch up with eventually in relation to these lines. But first of all, Kurt, before we do that, why don't you explain to our listeners how you do your work? How do you find these things out? I think that would be interesting to know for people too.
Okay. Well, I use Google Earth, the digital globe. The accuracy of Google Earth is said to be at least 15 meters, but I've found it to be, by testing it with my GPS unit here at home, that it's far more accurate than that in most cases. And what I'll do is I'll find a significant axis such as the Dome of the Rock, and I'll measure the orientation of the building as good as I can, you know, using Google Earth. And then I'll plot lines on the globe, and it's important that this has to be on a globe, because if you use a flat map, it takes a lot of different knowledge to create the correct arc. And then you have to change the scales of the map and everything that Google Earth lets you do immediately. So what I'll do is I'll plot out all the azimuths suggested by the building and survey along and see if it matches any other features that seem to be have a philosophical or religious similarity.
Yeah. An important site, as you say, either to the culture that we're looking at historically or something else, because sometimes you might stumble over tidbits that, well, first of all, you didn't know about. I guess you discover a lot of interesting things along the way, but also sites that on the surface might not seem to be that important, but then the more you look into it, you understand, wait a minute, there's more to this, basically.
Yes, usually, and you'd be surprised how many times when you do this that after a while it becomes very obvious that it's going on, that it's intentional cultural activity. And I keep going back to the Vatican, and that's the most obvious example, because the St. Peter's Square has this keyhole-like design to it with St. Peter's Basilica there and everything, and it points to about 88.61 degrees to the east, and it seems to point right exactly to the dome of the Hagia Sophia in Istanbul. And really, if you look at the history of these two cities, we know that Istanbul or Constantinople was founded by Constantine, in which he did a ceremony to establish the Axis Mundi himself with the augurs, and that he intentionally created this alignment, I believe, because the Egyptian obelisk had already been there since 40 AD. And that's what you'll see, these kinds of, that one's obvious. It's just the Eastern Roman Empire and the Western Roman Empire at various times were allied or were opposed to each other.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he was just trying to create a philosophical and spiritual bond. I mean, there's a lot of, occult overtones, but there's a lot of practical uses of using this too, because it lets the people who tax you and administer places in the empire to have a better view of the spatial orientation of where the cities and towns are compared to the center of the axis.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So obviously Google Earth Google Earth is a very powerful tool that one can use to even both verify and check some of these things for themselves and find out more. But how accurate does it have to be in your view? Because again, I think this kind of dovetails a bit with my second question I had about this, and this is how the ancients, in your view, how the ancients who designed some of these things knew that they were going to line up. They must
right.
have had some surveying here. Are they geometricians, masons? Where how do we explain some of this if we can?
Right. Well, you're right. Some of them aren't as precise as we could do with GPS equipment in the modern world, but what I believe they were using, there's a really interesting researcher. His name is Crichton Miller, and he has discovered a lot of information about an instrument that he believes was a very secret and cloistered item called the Celtic Cross or the Solar Cross. And the measurements that are capable of being done with this instrument are within 3 arc minutes, which, you know, from, let's say, the Great Pyramid to the true North Pole would leave about a 30-mile variance either way in your accuracy. So there's a few things that I found where I'll have an octagon such as Poplar Forest, and I'll have the Georgia Guidestones, and I'll connect the two, and the facet of the octagon at least appears to point there, even if the exact bearing of the building isn't like that. But if you use the variance of the 3 arc minutes that they were in the instrument they were using, and the degree of error, that all of these might be possible. And I think if you're plotting lines on Google Earth and two structures' orientation seems to match from 1,000 miles away, even though there could be a little bit of inaccuracy, you should start to at least look and determine whether those are associated or not, because that's just a big hint right there that they're associated. And then usually when you do some research, you do find that they are. There's people, they had associations with each other, they were all Masons, or they were all part of the Catholic Church, and even the themes of the monuments match each other. And in fact, when I made that association with Poplar Forest and the Georgia Guidestones, I happened to be watching a documentary a few nights later where a man made the same association without even knowing the information that I had come up with. So there's other people making the same associations I am using the geomancy or the spatial association of these things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, very interesting. So number of questions here that comes up is what this means, I guess, from a philosophical point of view, what the purpose would be for those who actually designed this with the intention there that let's have this monument line up with this one, or this have... Probably, and you can clarify this further if you want to, this has probably been the case in the past that people have, we have one monument that was built first, it might have been even rebuilt at some point or slightly adjusted even if that was the case, and then consequently someone has come along and said, well, we need an object over here that connects with this ancient object or site, basically, building. How do you think that, how detailed has this been when it's been built and so forth, because it takes us into another realm. I guess that's what I'm trying to get to. We think that cultures and civilization, they do things independently from each other, but what this seems to suggest is that there is a connectivity between them in some way or another, correct?
Yes, it definitely does, and that's a good example we could look at is the Basilica San Vitale that I was talking about that was built by Justinian kind of in a secret matter, a manner, but he ended up controlling it. Because the Basilica San Vitale is interesting because it points to Axum, Ethiopia, as I was discussing before, but it also creates an azimuth that goes to Mount Ararat. And many of the other significant axes, such as the Great Pyramid and the Dome of the Rock, also point lines to Mount Ararat. And that's where, obviously, the story of Noah's Ark is. And... another fascinating place that you might not expect or you might not look for a cultural association right away is Basilica San Vitale seems to point right to Buckingham Palace in London.
Mm-hmm.
And this is also where the Olympics are coming up. And the Hexagon of Baalbek also points right to the City of London.
Interesting.
So we're looking at really beyond just the practical definite legal descriptions of property that can be attained, which, by the way, Thomas Jefferson later made a grid to do just that worked in a similar way. But what they're doing is creating talismans of meaning and importance to them. And it is also possible for an opposing group to try to do something to upset that energy if they feel. A lot of this centers around the value of prayer, I believe, actually, is why they value the directional attributes. I mean, there's all kinds of theories about earth energies and things like that that are entirely possible, that there was some kind of communication that was possible from point to point. But, for example, when you examine the Muslim world today, number one, the faithful always face Mecca to pray.
Yeah,
but also in each mosque, there's an element of each building that also points that direction. I mean, that makes sense. So they can easily come in and see which way to pray. And so what we may be looking at is a hidden or cloistered knowledge of the use of the solar cross to define property. And this was done by a priesthood. And this is back in the era, of course, when all things practical and scientific were mixed with the spiritual views that people had, and the Gnostic views, and the you know, whether they had a pantheon of gods or monotheism, still all this was valued for those reasons. And like originally in Mecca, for instance, that before the Muslim faith made that the center of their faith, there were 360 different idols of gods in Mecca, which happens to correspond with the number of degrees in the compass. So you have to wonder if part of this directional value had to do with a certain deity in each direction. And that is backed up later by other axes, such as the Tower of Winds in Athens, which was built in the 3rd century BC, that was definitely used as an axis. And it was an octagonal, smaller tower, but on each facet of the octagon was a god. And they had a god for each direction of the wind, or each slice of the pie that octagon defined from that distance. And so there is a lot of religious overtones as well. The whole Tower of the Winds templum and Axis fits in with the legend of Apollo traveling to the north every year. And I did indeed find an azimuth from the Tower of the Winds that goes to Trelleborg Viking Fortress in Denmark.
Denmark, yeah. I saw that video you made about that. That was very interesting. Borgholm is another area connected to this Trelleborg in Denmark. So that's right. That's interesting that all of these things seems to interact. Again, I guess I'm back to that question of, this would mean that we must have traveling surveyors and geometricians/masons traveling around, setting up important sites in these locations then ahead of time. Correct?
Yes, I think. Yeah. Yes, definitely. I think. Back to the Tower of the Winds again, one of the exact even azimuths suggested by that points right to the circle of Avebury in England.
Mm-hmm.
And that, you might surmise, is Avebury, obviously, or Avebury, excuse me, is much older than the Tower of the Winds, and maybe the Tower of the Winds could have been oriented where it was to create this even spatial association. It could suggest, now I'm not going out on a limb to say that the people who created Avebury later went to Athens and created the Greek culture, but this class of people that you're discussing, that you brought up, that may have had this cloistered knowledge of the use of actually accurately plotting things, may have had something to do with it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And when you think of the political advantages you can have of knowing a more direct trade route or being able to draw more accurate maps because of this knowledge is really back in this era cutting edge.
Absolutely.
So even since the days of Egypt and before that, they made great efforts to keep this secret. And there's all kinds of evidence of, you know, the use of hematite and magnets possibly to even form a compass. We know they used it in temples to create kind of kinetic pieces of art and things like that. And the Chinese, long before the compass was supposed to have been invented, were using a compass to do feng shui, were to arrange their temples and buildings and things like that. So you'd have to kind of maybe surmise that it would be difficult to use a compass for that reason and not realize that you could use it to navigate and map things also.
Now, we do have this idea of Masonic cornerstones and things like that, telling, having incorporated into them the information about another site or another temple, maybe close by or further away, meaning it by looking at one monument, if you will, or one building, you could surmise what is in the vicinity or where you would even would have to go to get to the next one. This with the Masonic cornerstone is something our guest Dan Tapman have pointed out many times. And hence, I go back to this idea that the octagonal shape must be important, maybe for this reason as well. And I want to get your take on this. We have, if we double the octagonal, 8, we get 16, and then just we need to double it once more to get up to 32, which is the number of spokes in the compass rows. And we know that you could orient and navigate according to this. This is, you know, ancient navigational knowledge. So is there a way we can tie these things in, do you think, together?
Well, there is some evidence that the earlier directional systems were based on the hexagon. And that kind of is backed up maybe by the age of Baalbek and the span of time over which it was used, which is thought to be a lot earlier than even when they built the hexagon there. But Baalbek was really what I would consider the Roman imperial axis that was kind of kept a secret, and they're the ones who built the later structures there that we see now. But the later directional systems were possibly developed into an 8 and 16 directional system. There is Etruscan material culture in Italy that suggests that they had a 16-point directional system that was based on the octagon.
Yep.
Now, when you also look at the octagon or that shape in a symbolic manner, it creates the Elu symbol or the Sumerian symbol for God or heaven. And some even define that as meaning heaven's gate or stargate. And when you see, even though the Great Pyramid is square, you can make an eight-directional system out of that by using each direction suggested by the facets as well. So I think also it relates to the Labarum symbol that Constantine used, which Crichton Miller, the man who I told you about who did all the work about the solar cross, even likens the Labarum symbol to being a representation of a device that can be used to actually accurately measure with. And, of course, we all know the Labarum symbol is related to Minoan symbols that are similar, and the Labari symbol, which led actually to the value of the labyrinth that's come later. And labyrinths indeed are a major component of many local geomantic systems. If you have an axis mundi, there'll usually be a labyrinth in association with it that is aligned with the axis.
That's right.
I found that time after time, and even some new ones are being constructed here in the United States right now. There's a whole rash of these being built, and many of them that I'm seeing are being built in conjunction with the geomantic systems of even smaller towns.
Now, let me run this by you because I want to clarify one point you made there as well about the occult octagon. You do indeed have, there's a website that details this, and this might be also the one you're talking about referring to, where they've laid out the Giza pyramids, the three, and then, as you said, created an octagon around it to include them. It's somewhat difficult to explain, but I'll link this up for people that they can look for this for themselves. But even to further, you know, clarify this, even the pyramid themselves have an indentation in the four sides, meaning they are actually octagonal in shape.
Correct. But of course, remember, what we're seeing is the pyramids without the casement stone.
That's right. That's correct.
So we don't know if the casement stones were still on there. That I've looked at that and I've thought about exactly what you're saying, and it may work that way. And unfortunately, we don't know what the pyramids looked like before they destroyed the casement stones, or whether the sides were completely flat or maybe the indentations there were made to support the weight of the casement and support that better too.
Yep.
Was some of my thoughts. So, but yeah, I have seen some other people espousing the fact that the pyramids actually have eight sides each.
Now, could we talk a little more about this idea that this is the gods' house in a way? There's schematics of the Dome of the Rock, the Temple Mount. There's an octagonal shape. Many churches, as you already have pointed out, have this particular geometry in them as well. I wonder if there's something more to it as well. If there's something else that it's trying to signify or convey to the people that walk into a building as such. I don't know. What's your feeling about that?
Well, that kind of speaks to the part that we don't know and don't define when I was talking about the power of prayer earlier. There are lots of people who really do actually believe that is a viable thing. And it is interesting when you visit some of these places, even if it's just a church near where you live, that the kind of feeling you might get when you go there. Even if you're not aware of any of this, you might get a certain feeling of reverence or preparation to be closer to God. And also that what we need to look at as far as the Gnostic side or the occult side of things, or how this all relates to the story of Jacob's ladder, where, you know, Jacob watched the angels ascending and descending from heaven, and then later also we have the story of Muhammad at the Dome of the Rock ascending to heaven and everything. So the Scottish call these places thin places, where the space between God and man is thinner. So if there is a real energy to a certain node, or there's a priesthood that can discern where it would be better to put a temple or an axis, which might be easier the more time goes on, because you see traditionally they're all built atop the ruins of the older cultures' holy place also. So there definitely could be something to that. Now, whether it's an actual physical function of that point on the earth, or this energy was actually created by the significance that people give to it.
Exactly, it's energy then that it's there. If it wasn't there to begin with, it certainly has been created as a focus point when people are in this area praying, giving almost energy to it, in a way.
Right, and that's part of what we give to it. I know I made this analogy on the last show, but there's that movie, The Field of Dreams, about the man who feels strangely compelled to build the baseball field. But he says, if you build it, they will come.
That's right.
The hook line of the movie. And I think that kind of speaks to the way that all of these monuments and churches and everything affect our psyche, whether we're aware of it or whether we're even an adherent of that religion or not. You might go there and experience something anyway because of this kind of unexplained energy that might be there. And this also speaks, I guess, to the earth energy theories that, you know, Carl Monk has and Joseph Farrell and some other people, about there actually being a way to facilitate the megalithic construction of the temples themselves because of the particular position they have. And this may be why these positions were valued.
Yes.
That possibly this grid of monuments maps out some underlying structure of the earth that can be manipulated, you know, via electromagnetism or some basic form of technology that we're not aware of.
Absolutely right. So even if there isn't a ley line underneath the structures or connecting the structures, we might be witnessing the creation of a grid work of sorts that have these node points and energy significance. So even if it hasn't been that there from ancient days, it seems more and more likely that we do have it today then, because the whole network is connected in a way.
Yes, it's all connected together, and in addition to that, it's been going on throughout time. I mean, we see still in the modern world here today that things like this are being created, and there's really not a point of history that you can look at where this wasn't valued and known of in a secret manner. So it's all been, you know, kept a secret in a way. I say that too, but I mean, if you really look at it, I was able to discern this. There's a lot of other people that if you really just take the time to look into it, you will see instances of it. So it's not really hidden. I think, you know, if there groups of people don't want you to know about this, they're just counting on all the regular way our society works to make you not believe it because it's not on TV. It's not part of the media. It's not taught in school. So, you're just crazy for believing it. But if you look at it, the cultural material here and the way it's arranged just screams that men did this. I mean, I've seen, you know, academic people kind of make a whole career out of one Native American site where there were a few chips of stone there from tools that were made. And in this instance, we're just seeing volumes and volumes of cultural information that says this was done on purpose.
Yep.
So there's little doubt that this has been going on for years, and there must be a secret brotherhood, I think, even beyond the Masons that kind of dictates this or has some influence.
I believe you're right. I wanted to tie in this to something that's being built today as we speak as well.
Sure.
in this octagonal shape. We have people like Jake Coetzee in the past, Scott Onstott over from Secrets in Plain Sight have also pointed this out. The Freedom Tower actually is an octagonal shape, although it doesn't maybe look for such when you see an image from it. Technically, it's called a square antiprism, but you basically have two interlocking rectangular shapes, I guess symbolizing the two towers that used to be there before, that now stands on one space together. So they actually create from above an octagonal shape. Have you looked at the Freedom Tower or anything yet?
Yes, and I'm really glad you brought that up because back in 2009 when I first started doing this, I made a video about the geomancy of 9/11 in which I linked it all to Cleopatra's Needle, which is in Central Park. And if you connect an azimuth between Cleopatra's Needle and the American Jewish Heritage Museum, which is in Lower Manhattan right near the World Trade Centers, that's a hexagon. And not only does this azimuth match the orientation of Central Park and the streets of Northern Manhattan, but it matches a facet of that hexagon. And the line that was created touched the northwest corner of the North Tower. So now that they've started, I was amazed when I saw this. I went on to Google Earth. The tower was about halfway built, and it did represent an octagon from plan view. The part of the midsection of it is an octagon. And it matched the line I had drawn 2 years earlier perfectly.
Hmm.
So they had even oriented the building to match this line that I had identified. And you can see that video on my survival cell channel on YouTube that shows that, and that just amazed me because I had actually drawn the line on Google Earth 2 years prior.
Mm.
They had changed the imagery to show the Freedom Tower and halfway built, and I just turned it on and the line matched it.
Hmm.
So it's almost as if they built and oriented that building with the system that I have identified in mind.
Yep.
Would be my guess. In other words, that's a heck of a coincidence if it's not.
That's right. That's right.
So, and that also speaks to kind of what I was talking about earlier. It's almost as if 9/11 was part of it was to attack the representative axis and templum that somebody had set up before, to kind of destroy that and come in and put their own talisman on the line instead.
Mm-hmm.
So that was kind of curious too. If you wanted to really get into the, you know, occult symbolism and what was going on there, I mean, it's like a silent war that's been going on the earth for a long time with, you know, Catholic factions and Masonic factions and royal factions and other factions that we don't even know of.
That's right.
Kind of battling over all of this and valuing it all in a big way. I mean, in one regard, it may be just because it's like a game board where if you control this axis and that axis, naturally you control the region around them also.
Very interesting. And again, that could be an occult significant gesture, but it also might... Well, we don't know how these things really affect both the mass consciousness, but also the Earth around it. You could be right. It could basically mean that if you manage in some way to take control of these major energetical talismans, or you build one yourself, maybe it will work in your favor in some way, in ways that is maybe undescribable, but it's something that you might begin to see after the fact that you've established your talisman in the region. Who knows?
Sure, and you use the axis. I mean, from a practical perspective, that's the center of your framework. If you have another colony city or something that's located along one of the azimuths suggested, you'll definitely make an effort to put somebody there who is familiar with your philosophy, who agrees with you, that's going to support what you do. So, and these kind of define travel routes too, and things like that. So all the dynamics that make society work and information be able to be exchanged can be dictated by these also and controlled, because this cloistered priesthood or group of people are the only ones that know how to accurately map and give directions from it. So it's like a kind of like a utility grid, or even a computer fiber optic system, where they control the CPU and all the information that goes out along it to every place that they value.
Mm-hmm.
And all the symbology and statuary and things like that help you identify that. I mean, I was talking to a Mason about all this not long ago, and he said, well, I think you're reading too much into it. He said, all these things are so when you come into a certain town, you'll know that that's who's there and who might have an influence on what's going on. And to me, that he was agreeing with me when he said that, because really that's kind of what they are.
Yeah.
And it does relate to the whole Roman system of having colony cities. And they even had a system where there were secret names for each colony that was only known to the priesthood and the ruler. So there was all kinds of, occult psychological things that went along with this to make it a secret, to give it religious significance.
Mm-hmm.
And also this may speak to the secret religion. Like I was speaking about how the Byzantines earlier may have actually influenced Masonry, because Charlemagne seemed to have an unusual value of the Byzantine rulers Justinian the First and Second. And, I spoke of how both of those Roman rulers kind of manipulated their octagonal structures into being. Charlemagne built the Aachen Cathedral, which an azimuth from the Vatican points right to.
Mm-hmm.
And that has an octagonal element in it. And, from studying art history and architectural history, there's been a debate going on for years about the odd influences, cultural influences displayed in the Aachen Cathedral, because the interior of it resembles the Dome of the Rock very much, of the octagonal portion. And there are plaques and displays there of Masonic symbols at the Aachen Cathedral also. And this is where all of the Holy Roman Emperors were crowned.
That's right.
Yes, after Charlemagne. So, what's going on there? Here we have they're the Holy Roman Emperors, but it seems like he began to develop, I believe, the more modern form of Masonry or Knights Templarism that later we all know about more from the Crusades and things like that. And there's lots of instances that there's a really interesting story where Emperor Justinian II was the only Roman ruler to be deposed and regain his crown.
Hmm.
And when they deposed him the first time, they slit his nose because Roman law said that a defaced person could not be the emperor.
Mm-hmm. Hmm.
So Justinian took to wearing a golden prosthetic nose. And when the later Ottonian Holy Roman ruler opened Charlemagne's vault, they placed a golden nose on his corpse when they closed the vault back up. And there's also rumors and legends and stories that they removed the coronation gospels from Charlemagne's tomb and other, quote, unknown secret manuscripts. So this is one of the first in a long line of hidden vault legends and hidden treasure legends that are associated with geomantic mysteries. So you see also later people using, that were in the know, using these spatial associations to actually hide treasure or send someone on a grail quest, basically.
And Aachen Cathedral is, I believe, one of the first that actually have that eye in the pyramid emblem. And this is actually on the outside of it, on another building as you walk in through the gates towards the cathedral. I was there last year, and it's a beautiful building. You feel that there's something there when you walk in there, for sure. It's a mm-hmm. incredible place. Yeah,
it is. It's a beautiful structure, and really it seems like the Holy Roman Empire had their own agenda beyond simply being part of the Roman Empire. Mm-hmm. It seems like they had their own values and went about things in their own way. And they also developed this strange, if you really look into history, the Germans throughout history have had this close relationship with the Muslim world.
Yeah.
And even we find in World War I, they were allied with the Ottoman Empire.
That's right, yeah.
And I've always thought it was strange even that it's called the Ottoman Empire, because the ruler that supposedly inspired that name, his name doesn't resemble Ottoman at all, but the Ottoman Empire resembles the Ottonian dynasty of the Holy Roman Empire.
Mm.
I mean, we even had, as late as 1899, Kaiser Wilhelm II, he propagated this tradition of Roman rulers visiting Baalbek. And he actually visited there, and soon after that, we got the Baalbek projection maps, using Baalbek as the center of a mapping projection. So I feel that he was aware of the directional attributes of the hexagon there also. And Alexander the Great went there. There's records of several Roman rulers going to Baalbek, even though they were ruling from Rome or Constantinople. And that's a big trip in those days. So there's something hidden about Baalbek that was valued by all the Roman rulers. And that go ahead.
Oh, no, I was just going to mention, because this is a really good point. I think that other people have argued that these divisions are artificial in a few different ways. Again, if you look at the Basilica of San Vital that you brought out, and then the Dome of the Rock, that supposedly is going to be a Islamic, you have much of the same geometrical design incorporated into it, and this is certainly throughout the world we could make these comparisons as well. Of course, it doesn't mean that they are all aligned, but it means that potentially that what we've been talking about here, Kurt, that we have a secret group on top, a masonry or above, that they're not interested in these petty little differences, almost to the point that they've been created, actually, in fact, for different purposes. But there is no such division. The higher up the ranks you come, I guess that's my point. Interesting one.
Yeah, and I think that you're right. They don't care if the Muslims control it or not. It's still their axis.
Yeah.
And you almost see this dynamic, you know, going on in a lot of political things that are going on today, where it just seems like there's some other group fighting over the United States, and we don't have any control over what's going on.
That's right.
And you just go ahead.
Well, could that be what actually is charging the sites, if you will, as well? If we have, I mean, imagine the Dome of the Rock. I mean, how many different people through different periods in time have been trying to control it and own it and occupy it, and then if someone holds it for a long time and then another group gets it again, what a charge into that area of all new people amassing to the site, and it could be an incredible powerful thing. So what I'm arguing here is they who actually control the geometry and the ley lines behind the structures knows this, and therefore hence they've created the division to have more people focus on it and more people worrying over it. And that might be what's feeding into it. I have no idea, but could be.
No, that makes a lot of sense. And that's why you may see a lot of people feel that sporting venues, and even in the Roman world, all of the hippodromes and coliseums seem to be part of the geomantic system of that city. And really what speaks to your point is the Knights Templar came and made it a point to occupy the Temple Mount later. It's almost as if they were privy to this knowledge that Justinian II had actually built this, and they had a direct heritage from Justinian II and first that influenced Charlemagne, that later affected the Teutonic Knights and all of the people who came to the Dome of the Rock during the Crusades. And also what I found, I believe that they were aware of the directional attributes of the Dome of the Rock prior to the time they even came there. Because it's clear already, we know that the Knights Templar were kind of sprung from the Cistercian order of monks. And if you look at some of the research of Henry Lincoln and Erling Forbeson, they've established that the Cistercian monks did have a tradition of measuring the earth and being able to, you know, accurately plot positions, possibly through the use of the solar cross.
Yep.
And what we see is that they may have known this and formed the Knights Templar to go there and study. Part of what they were looking for was to go there and establish the directions, because we see later the southern orientation of the Dome of the Rock points to Axum, Ethiopia. And this, if you're familiar with Graham Hancock, he basically is telling us that that is the supposed location of the Ark of the Covenant in Axum, Ethiopia. Mm-hmm. And there's also legends of Knights Templar traveling to Axum and going there and questing for the Ark, and also due south along the same line as Lalibela, Ethiopia, where all of the rock-hewn churches are built. And these were built by Mescal Lalibela, supposedly to build a reproduction of Jerusalem. So you have the Dome of the Rock in Jerusalem pointing to another city built by a Christian Ethiopian ruler to emulate the layout of Jerusalem. Now, what's fascinating about Lalibela is that it's pointed to by the array at St. Peter's Square using the obelisk and the east-southeast Windrose marker.
Mm-hmm.
And then the direct opposite Windrose marker, the east-northeast, goes to Chartres Cathedral, where there's actually carvings of the Queen of Sheba taking the Ark of the Covenant to Ethiopia. So one continuous line via St. Peter's Square connects Chartres Cathedral and Lalibela together.
Interesting.
Which is also pointed to by the Dome of the Rock. So it's all, even just the way these buildings point, and if you read the sign and the seal or research that a little bit by Graham Hancock, everything that's being said in there supports the possibility of what I'm saying being true.
Mm. Yeah, I've always felt there was something important with these regions in Ethiopia. Years ago, I looked into some of those incredible churches that are carved right into the ground, and the fact that they're being keepers of. They even have these weird staffs, some of the priests there,
right.
They have swastikas on it and stuff like that. All kinds of stuff is going on there. Weird.
Yes,
interesting.
That's an interesting. And also, I believe they were influenced by the Byzantines also. If you look at a lot of the older iconographic religious artwork there and some of the motifs they have, it resembles kind of the more provincial style of art that the Byzantines had compared to the Western Romans.
Yeah.
And you also see the symbols in all of the churches there. They have kind of this, well, it's the same shape as the obelisk in Axum. They're a tall obelisk, but with like a half of a rising sun at the top of it. And the windows in many of the churches have this form also. And there are some graveyards in Constantinople that have headstones of the same form.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that possibly the Ethiopian Orthodox religion is more related to the Byzantine Empire than the Western Roman Empire, and that's one reason even today that the relations aren't good between those two countries, because Italy has tried to invade Ethiopia twice throughout history.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And one could even surmise a conspiracy theory where they wanted to go there so they could control the Ark of the Covenant.
Well, I mean, Ethiopia overall has this interesting history. As we know it, it has ties into a lot of important figures in Hebrew and Jewish tradition. They had they have a group there of the Ethiopian Jews, or Beta Israel, and they've had these different operations. I don't know if you recall that Operation Moses, Operation Sheba, Operation Solomon, to fly out these group of Ethiopian Jewish people to Israel, I think, and stuff like that. So it's
I have read about that, and you see also what Hancock is saying, that over time there the Ark switched hands from the Christians to the Hebrews there. And that was part of the reason that Lalibela was built when it was, because at that point they had control of it.
Yeah.
So I think the Ark used to be there, and then later was moved back to Aksum.
Very interesting. Court, I think we should, we can go on and on and on here, because there's so much to talk about, and we shall do that in the second segment. I do want to take a little break at this point and then carry on for more. And I also want to squeeze in a few minutes here of you talking a little bit more about your book, because we haven't mentioned that at all, and I do want to get that in there before we take a break here. The Axis, or only Axis Mundi, not the Axis Mundi, is the new book that you've have out. You have a Kindle version available. You have also the physical copy through Create Space. Give us a little rundown on this, the when and the why and how people can get a copy of it as well, Kurt.
Yeah, you can get it from Amazon.com or CreateSpace.com. And the Kindle version is also available there on Amazon. Most of it, I have a huge portion of the book that's just for free on my blog also. I wasn't really setting out to make a fortune selling books or anything, and I thought that a lot of this information was important enough or interesting enough to people that it might, you know, give them a different view of things that are going on in the world now. So I put most of it up there for free. So if you care to buy a book just to support my efforts, I appreciate it. But if not, most of it's for free there. And all my videos, obviously, on YouTube cover some of the same subject matter.
Absolutely. And again, the main website that you would want to go to find out more about this is survivalcell.blogspot.com. Is it .com? It is, right?
Yeah,
it?
Yes.
It said .se for me here now for some reason, but okay. Survivalcell.blogspot.com. Excellent. Court, we will continue talking more here in the next segment. I'm looking forward to doing so. Stay with us. We'll be right back with more.
No man, no madness, no the sad power may prevail. And possess, conquer my country's heart, they rise to fame. She is eternal, long before nations' lines were drawn, when no flags flew, when no army stood, my land. And you ask me why I love her through wars, death, and despair. She is the constant, we who don't care. And you wonder, will I leave her? But how? I cross over borders, but I'm still there now.
Segment with Kurt Lindahl, we discuss how it's possible that Knights Templar and other secret society initiates are compelled to go on a Grail quest. Kurt also talks about pre-Masonic groups and ancient explorers who had the knowledge of the Axis, like the Hanseatic League. We discuss Ed Leeds Gallin and his Coral Castle in Florida related to these ley lines. We'll discuss how religion is also propagated along azimuth lines, such as the Mormon religion. Joseph Smith found the Golden Tablets very close to a line created by the azimuth of the northwest facet of the Pyramid of Giza. Kurt also talks about Mecca, the holy city of Islam. We'll discuss more important points on the azimuth, such as the Rosalind Chapel. Then we'll talk about how the Newark earthworks were oriented to point a line to the Great Pyramid of Giza in Egypt. We end with more on the Thomas Jefferson ley line. Fascinating stuff coming up. All the details on how to sign up and tune in is on the website redicecreations.com. Subscribe if you're not yet a member. Next on Red Ice Radio, we have Holland van Heuvenhoff and James Lane talking about their film A Noble Lie about the Oklahoma City bombing in 1995. Then we have Tom Horn, Cliff High, Dean Clifford, John B. Wells, Neil Kramer, Richard Merrick, Nora Gedgaudas, Britt D. and Tom Secker, Richard Grove, Alex Newman, Peter Halldorsson, Eric Karlström and Jordan Maxwell. I hope you tune in again when we return with more radio shortly. But right now we are going to continue with Kurt Lindahl with the second hour of our program. Stay with us for much more.